the new security pact between the US, UK and Australia, and already denounced by China as irresponsible, narrow-minded and a Cold War mentality. The AUKUS pact will see Australia build a fleet of nuclear-powered submarines for its navy using technology provided by the US. The new partnership was announced in a joint virtual press conference between US President Joe Biden, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson and Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison. And while China was not mentioned directly, the three leaders referred repeatedly to regional security concerns, which they said had grown significantly. The pact will focus on military capability, separating it from the Five Eyes intelligence sharing alliance, which New Zealand and Canada are part of. What are the implications of this new pact for regional and global security? And how will AUKUS impact on New Zealand's relationships with the pact partners and with China? With me now is Foreign Affairs Minister Nanaia Mahuta. Tēnā koe, Minister.
Tēnā koe, mihi ana ki te kaukoko te tā. Kia mā horohoro tō tātou nei reo. Good morning.
First, can we start with the significance of this pact?
Yes, well, it's an agreement between the US, the UK and Australia based on the similar goals and values that they have.
What then do you see as the likely impact of this pact on both regional and global security? Let's start with regional security.
Well, it's a decision that they've made based on their assessments of the region. Can I just say, from New Zealand's perspective, our independent foreign policy and our position on nuclear-powered vessels in our waters is well understood by our friends and partners.
And how do you see this impacting on global security?
Well, it's a determination that they've made based on a number of assessments. Can I come back to our region? And my understanding is that the reason for Australia entering into this particular agreement was so that they could purchase military hardware that enhanced their particular capability.
At the heart of this appears to be concerns about China's influence, growing influence in the Indo-Pacific region. How serious is this situation in your view?
Well, in our view, New Zealand's got to ensure that our values and interests are upheld as we look to work with all people who have an interest in the region to enhance greater peace, stability and security. We have a well-established position in terms of nuclear-powered vessels in our waters, and we're a part of the South Pacific Nuclear-Free Treaty, which does put some framework around our expectations for the region. The agreement that has been reached by three partner countries who, for the wider Indo-Pacific, are wanting to strengthen their capability insofar as the region.
Does New Zealand share those concerns around China's aggressive moves in the Indo-Pacific?
We are very much of a mind that in order to enhance the peace and stability of the region, the international rules and norms by which we should abide by which member nations of the UN abide by, encourage that we uphold, for example, in our waters, UNCLOS, that we respect treaties, and in our context, the South Pacific Nuclear Free Treaty is something that New Zealand has long held as a treaty that should be observed, and that we're mindful that it's important to ensure that we work on agreements that have been reached multilaterally. For New Zealand, we value our Five Eyes relationship. It's a security and intelligence cooperation arrangement. And this particular announcement does not affect those arrangements that we already have with like-minded countries.
Did the government know anything, hear anything about the formation of this pact?
No, we didn't, but it's not unusual given the nature of the agreement. It is not the fact that at the heart of the agreement for Australia was the purchase of nuclear-powered submarines. It's not the kind of arrangement New Zealand would be interested in. However, can I say that very quickly after, the Australian Cabinet was informed. Our Prime Minister and the Australian Prime Minister had a conversation in relation to this particular agreement.
Given our close relationship with Australia, though, wouldn't you have expected New Zealand to be asked to join the alliance?
The nature of that particular agreement and what was at the heart of it, which is was the purchase for Australia of military hardware with nuclear-powered subs as the core component of that agreement, does not align to our values and what we uphold for the Pacific. And as I say, New Zealand has long held the position where nuclear-powered vessels in our waters is not something we want to see more of.
Is there any consolation for the government that the EU was also kept in the dark? They're furious.
Well, it's not about who was kept in the dark. To some extent, it's about what we stand for. Canada, for example, wasn't included. There are a number of countries where they have agreements, either bilaterally or multilaterally, with any one of those three nations that were not a part of the agreement. So it underscores the fact that Australia, UK and the United States shared some common goals and values in relation to the nature of this agreement that was specific to them. And you know, that's not unusual.
What does this Australian alignment with the US and the UK mean for New Zealand?
Australia has been aligned to the UK and the US on a number of fronts, and so has New Zealand on a number of other fronts. It's a set of arrangements that are very fluid within the context of what we seek to work together on and what can best forward or progress our common and shared values and interests. In this particular instance, New Zealand wasn't open to the purchase of a nuclear-powered sub. We've long held the position that nuclear-powered vessels in Pacific waters is not something we want to see more of.
Does this signal that the US and indeed the UK are going to be more involved in the Asia-Pacific region?
Look, the signals from those countries that they see the Indo-Pacific as an important region is something we would welcome. Again, on a number of other fronts, we work very closely with the US, the UK, and absolutely with Australia. They're strong security partners for us, and they have been over a very long time, but the nature of this particular agreement does not further our interests and values, we believe, because we don't want to see nuclear-powered vessels in Pacific waters.
At the core of this new arrangement is building those nuclear-powered submarines in Australia that you mentioned. And it's the first time since 1958 that the US has shared its nuclear technology with an ally. So that's a huge step. Does that speak to the joint concerns about China?
I think there is, and we've certainly expressed over recent times, the growing assertiveness of China has caused for Australia some tension in the nature of several of their particular relationships. Can I say that our view in terms of what's good for the Pacific is country agnostic? We do not want to see more nuclear-powered vessels in our waters. We've long held that position. That's a respected position amongst partner countries, including the US, UK and Australia, and the nature of their particular agreement furthers their interests.
So New Zealand is very unhappy, would you say then, about this move to building nuclear-powered submarines in Australia?
Well, it's an arrangement where they're building their military capability according to their particular interests. New Zealand's often played a peacekeeping role when we've joined allied partners on a number of fronts, and we have our own military capability. We are not competing on scale and size in terms of our defence force capability, but New Zealand is absolutely committed to promoting and supporting activities that encourage peace and stability within the Pacific and across the border Indo-Pacific region, and our contribution to that is to ensure that we keep diplomatic channels open, that we advance the long-standing relationships that we've had with security partners like the US, the UK, Australia and Canada on the things that we can agree on.
The Australian nuclear-powered submarines clearly will not be welcome in our waters. Do you think there is a place for them in the Pacific at all?
Look, that's something that we'll have to cross when we get to that point. But we've had assurances from Australia that they understand our position and they respect it.
There's also an agreement as part of this to share on things like artificial intelligence and quantum technology. So does this mean New Zealand will increasingly become less relevant to regional security?
No, I don't think people should read into the one arrangement that will be excluded from other areas where we can absolutely agree on. Artificial intelligence, cybersecurity are areas where we absolutely can agree with allied partners on, and we would want to see further deepening of opportunities and networking of relationships around those core issues.
It's our Foreign Affairs Minister, Nanaia Mahuta. Ngā mihi nui, thank you so much for your time. Otago University Professor of Politics and International Relations, Robert Patman, is with me now. Kia ora, Robert.
Kia ora.
You've been listening to the Minister's comments there. Anything stand out to you?
I thought the Foreign Minister gave a very nuanced and careful justification for New Zealand's position, and I largely agree with it. I mean, I think that some people are interpreting this agreement, the AUKUS agreement, as some sort of sidelining of New Zealand. But in fact, if we were part of that agreement, if New Zealand had been included in that agreement, it would have caused quite considerable problems for us in terms of our commitment to non-nuclear security. We were one of the prime drivers of the Treaty for the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, which was signed earlier this year and which 88 countries have signed up to as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think Nanaia Mahuta made that quite clear, that this agreement doesn't sit comfortably with our commitment to non-nuclear security.
So actually, is it better for the government that they weren't given a heads up about it and certainly weren't invited to sign?
I think from the point of view of the United States, the UK and Australia, this is an agreement to mobilise and maximise their joint military capabilities to deal with a region which they see as presenting increasingly serious security problems. And I think from their point of view, New Zealand has a lot to offer in terms of its intelligence capabilities, in terms of its diplomatic capabilities, in terms of its political capabilities, but maybe not so much on the military side. So in a sense, given their preoccupation with the Biden administration's preoccupation, at least, of improving the American-led alliance system to deal with a security problem, it's not surprising that New Zealand was not included.
Do you think there needs to be this kind of defence alliance, i.e. how big is the threat posed by China, and how will this change the status quo?
Well, that is the crucial question, Lynn. It seems to me that there is, within the liberal democratic world, at least two strategic perspectives which do not always marry up. And I think New Zealand has a different worldview from Australia and the UK. They tend to assume in this globalising world that many of the security problems are best dealt with in very close alliance with the United States. We have excellent relations with the United States and a strong security relationship with the United States. But that doesn't mean that we're prepared to always agree with the United States. In 2003, when the United States invaded Iraq, the UK and Australia followed the United States in that invasion, something which we strongly disagreed with, and on strategic grounds, as the then Prime Minister Helen Clark made quite clear. So I think we have we do not see the world in that way. And I think we have a broader understanding. I think we tended to see a world in which many of the problems confronting countries, big and small, do not respect borders. I'm not just talking about COVID-19 here or climate change. I'm talking about security problems. If there's one lesson of the post-9/11 era, it is that problems like transnational terrorism just don't respect borders. So increasingly, we live in a world where everyone is more interdependent and interconnected. And I think New Zealand takes the view that this type of security arrangement may not necessarily solve the problems that we face in the Indo-Pacific region.
Do you see any impact on our relationship with Australia over this? You know, that first conversation between Jacinda Ardern and Scott Morrison, could there be any tension?
Well, it's very difficult to predict the future. I think there have been times when the Prime Minister of this country, Jacinda Ardern, has been candid in differences with Australia. We have a very close relationship with them. But when you have a close relationship with a country, I think you can speak candidly to each other. And we haven't always agreed with everything, but the Prime Minister has also been very supportive of Australia when China has tried to put pressure on Australia. So I don't think this will shake the New Zealand-Australian relationship. And I think we do need each other. And, you know, I don't see that changing. After all, there's more than 600,000 Kiwis living in Australia. There's a long historical association between the two countries. Yeah, I mean, there may be some Australians who may not be enamoured with this new arrangement. We'll just have to wait and see. But, you know, the other question is that there's been a lot of talk about China and the need to counterbalance it. And the question is, does this new security pact, AUKUS, does it strengthen the position of Xi Jinping in China or does it weaken it? That remains to be seen. Very interesting development, though, with China indicating it wants to join the Comprehensive and Progressive Trans-Pacific Partnership, of which both New Zealand and Australia are members, but the United States is not.
Robert, you suggested that this could politically backfire on the UK, the US and Australia. In what way?
Well, I think if you look at it through the eyes of many of the countries in the region, while many of them are very wary and very conscious of Chinese assertiveness, they may not welcome, in fact, may think it's counterproductive, that this sort of military-centred approach is being mobilised at this time. You know, this, for example, Britain, which has recently left the EU, is now looking for a global role. There are countries in the region, not least China, which doesn't have fond memories of British involvement in this region. And, diplomacy is often about perceptions to some degree. I mean, perceptions are different from reality, but they contribute towards it. And I think that one of the things that New Zealand has done successfully over the years has maintained a very close relationship with Australia, the UK, and the United States, but made it quite clear it wasn't an echo of them, that it had an independent foreign policy. Now, some people are saying, oh, that's just a figment of our imagination. We're terribly dependent on Australia, the UK, and the United States. But those countries in themselves are also interdependent with the rest of the world. You know, we live in a world where there's no unilateral solutions to many of the key problems we face. And, you know, we, as I said before, I think that New Zealand's position will probably, you know, be respected in the Indo-Pacific. We haven't backed down on our core values, which is respect for human rights, international rules-based system, which, as the foreign minister made quite clear in her comments, we depend on. It's critical for us. We trade with more than 100 countries around the world. We need rules in place, and we certainly are uncomfortable with powers, any superpowers that undermine the rules-based system.
Robert, there was a really interesting article by Peter Jennings on this in The Australian, and his argument is that in reality, the US, Britain and Australia each have a desperate need for this quasi-alliance to succeed, to quote him. And he said Joe Biden needs this after the debacle of the withdrawal from Afghanistan. He needs something to refocus the US attention. Britain needs a foreign policy focus after Brexit and reckons that a launching pad in the Indo-Pacific is a good way to go. And Australia needs friends after several years of being punished by Beijing. What do you think of that?
Well, I think there's a lot in Peter's analysis. Mr. Biden has taken a lot of flack for making a decision which was already made for him, actually, by the previous administration, the Trump administration, to withdraw American troops. But he's the person who had to execute it, and he's taken a lot of flack. And he has said, and his advisors have said, that they want to focus on building up the American position and the position of America's key allies in the Indo-Pacific. And I think they see Britain and Australia as very much fitting into that case. So, I mean, to come back to Peter's article, domestic politics often influences foreign policy, and the United Kingdom, you know, is taking quite a high risk here. I mean, it's withdrawn from the EU. It's now seeking to project itself globally. It wants to become a member of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and it's working closely with the United States. But so I think Peter's analysis is certainly very relevant to this. All countries have some domestic political motive for moving towards this pact. I think in terms of the three, Australia probably gets the most immediate spin-off or return, because there's no doubt about it that Australia's been subject to some quite unjustified intimidation and pressure from China. This may be a source of reassurance, but I do believe for all three countries, in the longer medium or in the medium term, it could have some political fallout for them, or in diplomatic terms.
Thank you very much for your time, Professor of Politics and International Relations at Otago University, Robert Patman.